Everybody likes guns, they just don't know it. Deep inside of his soul, there's a cowboy trying to get out.
Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the hosts and their guests.
Hello and welcome to episode 145 of New Shooter Canada. I'm one of your hosts, Mike Hissen, and tonight with me I have Benny.
Hello.
And Thomas.
Hello, Internet.
How are you guys doing tonight?
I'm good.
Thomas, how are you this week?
Heavily medicated. My back's still killing me, and I finally got to see my doctor. He's been on, his wife had a baby, so my doctor hasn't been practicing for about a month. And when you go to the clinics, they don't give you anything for pain. So I went to see the doctor, and he gave me some really good painkillers. So
old age isn't treating you well then?
No, not that my back's gone. I'm getting old. It's been tough. I am old. It's been tough sleeping because I can't get comfortable, and it locks up when in my sleep, so. Hopefully this new batch of medication helps.
Yep, hopefully. Since you're already talking, you want to tell us what you did this last week in guns?
I didn't do any shooting. Benny and I are going shooting tomorrow, but Neil picked up his my ranch hand that I sold him, so he was really happy. So I drove up to his wine shop and dropped that off. And then I ordered a Browning BL-22, the Grade 2 from Wholesale Sports. It was funny. I was looking at the website on Saturday night, and they had the Grade 2 on sale for 15% off. It's $726. So there was no date on the sale. I didn't know when it was finished. So I emailed them asking when the sale was over. Of course, the next day I looked at the website and it was back up to full pop. But then I got an email from them saying that if I wanted to order it, they would honor the price and they would give it to me for the 15% off. Our current selling price for those things is about $850 right now because everything went up $100 last year. So I got it for $726, which is pretty cool. Not sure about optics checks. Benny and I were talking about whether I want to put optics on it or not. We'll see. I know with the handguns, I'm having a problem seeing the front sight. Rifle with a 20-inch barrel, it might be a little bit easier. So once I get it, we'll take it to the range to see, you know, how it actually is with my aging vision. And if not, we'll put some type of small scope on it.
Do you think that the front sight would be closer or further away if it's a 20-inch barrel plus a stock and receiver versus your handgun front sight?
Well, it'll be much further away, which would be better.
So distance. So might a scout scope be an option then?
I find with the cataract, I've got two issues. First, aging eye, so I'm nearsighted. So anything up close, I can see. But then I've got a cataract coming. And so what's happened with the red dot used to be a perfect round dot, and I never had a problem with the red dot because you're focusing on the dot. But lately I noticed the dot's getting distorted, so it's my vision. But the crosshairs are fine. If it just has a regular crosshair on it, I'm okay. The problem is it's a real small receiver, so you don't want to put anything too big on it. I was thinking maybe like a compact scope or a small rimfire scope. We'll see.
What caliber? That's 22. Yeah, okay.
Well, I wanted this one because I've wanted a lever action rimfire for a very long time, and I've looked at all of them. And I almost bought one 10, 15 years ago, and I bought another 10-22 instead. So I finally broke down and got, because I've got four 5.22s in the safe, and I like the Browning because it's got a real short throw lever, and it's nice to have something where if you forget the magazine, you can still shoot the gun.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that. We're going to do a lever action show coming up soon. I'm still waiting for the transfer on the Strike One. I have been paid for it, but the CFO hasn't come through. And then Benny and I are still waiting on a transfer for my 22-45. I'm going to lend him one of my guns for his teaching until he gets one of his own. And then I met up with David Coping, the owner of Grand Power Distribution at FOC today. Fred is one of our stocking dealers. And he had some holsters drop off and some paperwork for them. Then he bought me lunch, which was great. And I got my new dealer packages, which basically explains the product and the price structures and stuff. And we discuss what we're going to do, because what's happening is that Winston Mew, he's going to be the West Coast rep. And Kayla is an assistant and she's a sponsored shooter. And then we have Crystal Powers. Now, she's not a sponsored shooter. She's more of a Grand Power ambassador because she's a really funny lady. And then I believe it's Jerry or Jeremy, and we've got another sponsored shooter in Ontario. So we're trying to get business into the Western. We have Profit Rivers, and we've got those guys out there on the West Coast. So we're going to try to go a little bit more inland, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and I'm going to be in charge of Ontario sales.
Nice.
Okay, so you're not selling to Joe Schmuck, you're selling to the distributor.
I can't sell to an individual. I can only sell to the stores.
Okay. So what you're saying,
hey, Mike,
is
you want to open this store?
Yeah. I was going to say, so what you're saying is there's going to be no new Shooter Canada discount anytime soon.
Well, I'm sure if I wanted to order one for myself, I could get it, but...
Yeah.
Well, that's the other bonus, too. When I messaged Dave, I said, well, you know, I've got a Q100, and I've got an XCal, and I've got a K22X trim. But I said, you know, I'm going to need some products to show people. I'd like to have a K100, and I'd like to have a P40, maybe 10mm. So sure, that's not a problem. We'll give you a demo gun. So I'm getting a whole bunch of products. You know, it's I can go into the dealership and show them some papers, but you know what it's like. You want it tactile. You want to feel what it's like in your hand.
Right.
So I can show them the difference between a P40 or show them the difference between a K100 with different back straps and stuff. So
does this mean Mike and I are getting really nice Christmas presents this year?
Maybe. Well, maybe Mike, but do you get Hanukkah presents?
I was going to let you off the hook. I didn't want to like make you give me 8 days of presents, right? So I was just going to give you the one.
8 days of presents?
I'm going to get it. Well, yeah, it's 8 days of Hanukkah,
man. You're going to need some magazines. You're going to need a holster, a mag pouch.
Good point, Mike. Good point.
It never just stopped with a new pistol. They're accessories. You got to accessorize that.
Oh, so true. So true.
I'm so doomed. I'm sure we could work something out, but I have to go through a retailer.
Yeah.
Well, the only problem I'm going to have is that out here, where I am in my area, Firearms Outlet Canada is our stocking dealer. And actually, these guys are awesome. Like with the stocking dealer program, just like cars or anything else, when you order from, say, GM, if you order so many of one units, you have to order, say, so many different models, and you have to order so many different units of that model and stuff. Then there's tier pricing and everything else. So you know, all the store has to actually do is order the firearms and the magazines. Well, FOC, they got everything. They've got pins. They've got springs. You know, it's great for me being a shooter. If I need a part, like if I pull a mic and I'm taking my gun apart and that spring rolls on the ground and I can't find it for 3 months, I don't have to go to Brunel's and hope, you know, pay $20 for one spring. I can drive down the Firearms Outlet and pick it up. So it's great that they actually carry all the parts and stuff too.
Yeah. Well, it's good that Grand Power supplies it, because I remember you saying stuff about some suppliers don't actually do that. They don't offer a full, you know, maintenance kit kind of thing.
Yeah, product support is important. Like you get some companies, like say for example, Odell. They're really good for product support. So if you start getting one of their Darias, they do carry magazines. They do carry parts. So if you get a newer gun that's coming in the country, it's nice to know that you have that product support there. Where Grand Power has been in Canada for a couple of years now. So everything's in the country. You can get anything you want. And say Firearms Outlet, because they're a stocking dealer, they have everything. You can go in, if you can ask for P40 or if you want an X trim or whatever, they can get it for you. And as soon as their stock goes down, we automatically send in another one. But the problem is, because, you know, he's such a good stocking dealer in our area, I can't set up any business around him. I don't want to interfere with his clientele area.
Right.
No, because you've got somebody that treats you really well like that, you have to treat them well. So I'm going to start going out of Durham, trying to go a little bit further out east and some of the bigger shops out that way, and then Northern Ontario. But to leave them their client base area and try to work, expand it more outwards.
Well, yeah, and it's not like you're doing anyone who wants to be a customer disservice, because they have really nice customer service there. So,
oh, it's a great store.
You're actually doing people a favor.
It's so busy. It was funny. We got there today and there's like 6 or 7 people standing outside waiting for it to open, because they don't open till 11 o'clock on Sunday. You know, we're smoking, standing around, and 10 or after 11, you know, the door still hasn't opened. And I guess the staff were just laughing because they'd opened the door 20 minutes earlier. We were all standing outside waiting for them to open. They'd already opened and unlocked the door. Nobody bothered tried to open the door. I guess we're waiting for them to stick their head out. But as soon as they opened, they had 5 or 6 people waiting to get in the store on a Sunday at 11 o'clock. So it shows you how well, you know, how needed the store is out here in that location.
I've said this before, like, for personally, I would, like, that's me. I would go first thing in the morning on a Sunday. But I went at like 12 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon, or was it a Wednesday or Thursday afternoon, and the store was full. Like, don't people have jobs? Like, what are they doing at a gun store?
Well, I have to remember, too, it's a GM town. So you got all the guys that do a GM and OPG, the power generating station. So you've got a lot of shift workers.
Yeah.
Well, 5 years ago, if you wanted something on a Sunday, your only option was Gagnon's. So, and I haven't had very nice experiences at Gagnon's.
Yeah.
Just they're extremely expensive. Really, really, especially their ammo. It's just way overpriced. At least, you know, Firearms Outlet, you get a reasonable price and they've got a good selection. And if they don't have it, they will get it for you, which is nice. What about you, Benny? What you doing guns this week?
I had an emotional roller coaster, if you will. I was trying to organize to get some friends out, to test my curriculum, if you will. And I finally got around to asking the person that I would have liked to use their property to run my non-restricted course, and they said no. And then I was like, oh shoot. I like built this whole thing up on basically assuming they'd allow me to use their land, and in the end they didn't. So that'd be a lesson to the rest of you. Make sure you can use the property you were planning on using before you start setting stuff up. So in the end, thank goodness Thomas stepped in and helped me out, and that'll work out. So hopefully tomorrow I will be bringing two new people to the shooting sports, and hopefully they will enjoy it enough to pursue it as a hobby. But we'll see.
How far are those two coming from?
They're like a 5-minute drive from my house. So they're going to come over to my house. I'm going to show them my firearms, show them how to use them properly. And then when they have all their questions, we have all that dealt with, we're going to head over to the range. And hopefully we'll be shooting outside so they can use some of the center fire firearms, have some fun.
Anything else?
I went to Desauto today to set up for that. So I picked up some disposable earplugs, some targets, and I picked up a giant magnet to help separate my brass from my media when I finally get around to doing that.
Now, did you get one that has a on-off switch?
I did. I was very tempted not to because I was like, stronger the better, right? I decided instead to go for the not so strong one and get the turn off and off. Whatever.
Yeah.
Turn on and off thing.
Yeah, because you end up spending more time trying to pull all the pins off of the magnet to keep, like, to reuse them than you do actually, like, you know, picking them all up. So
it's funny because, like, the videos I've watched of people using, I think they were using the Frankfurt Arsenal one, which I think is like $20 or something.
More than that, I paid for it.
I didn't want to say. So I was like, every time I've seen people do it, like they run it over stuff and it hasn't really picked up everything. So I'm like, I probably should get a stronger magnet. But the stronger magnet at Princess Auto comes with like a 3-foot stick attached. Okay. And I'm like, I don't need something that long. So I ended up just getting the really short one, and that was $10. So I'm sorry.
Oh no, that's good. I didn't know they had them. That
so it's an electronic magnet.
No, it has like a plunge. It's basically like a plunger. So when you pull the plunger, it moves the magnet far enough away from the, in this case, plastic bottom, that you can like brush the whatever's on it off, and it won't be stuck to it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you might still find, and maybe this would change if you had bought the stronger magnet, but I have a magnet on the end of a short little stick, like the side of a screwdriver, and even after I've done the big magnet, I still take that and just kind of stir the brass around, because sometimes if there's one piece of steel in there, the magnet might not have enough power to pull it out, especially if it, you know, it might lift it up against the brass. But not enough to lift the brass up and out of the bucket so that you knew that one piece is still inside there.
Right.
So you might find that, you might not, I don't know. It really depends, I think, on how you actually, like, when I've seen the videos, it seems like they take theirs and they like to dump it out onto like a plastic tray. I use like a bowl, so I don't know if that would make it any different.
I was going to get like a sieve or something that I could like basically shake out the media from the brass.
Yeah,
but I haven't. I don't know. I'm not really. I decided. I think I'm just gonna go for the industry. You know, like just get one of those buckets with the the cage thing rather than try and jerry-rig something.
Oh, you're talking about like what most people use as a separator to take like the corn cob or the walnut out.
Right. I can use the same thing for this.
That would probably work well too.
Yeah.
Yeah, because really it's just about, you know, turning over all the brass and just so that the steel has a chance to fall out.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
So I got that, and I'm now the legal guardian of an AR. Lower. I finally got my my papers from the CFO. That was a little nerve-wracking. Having received the package in the mail and then realizing, wait a second, I don't have any paperwork saying this is mine.
Well, when you received it in the mail, did you not get did they not include in there the transfer paper, I guess you'd call it?
I don't think so. I think it came with just like a, I didn't look at it, but I assumed it was just the, like the shipping, what's it called?
Every time I've gotten restricted, it's always come with a little piece of paper and it's like official RCMP. And it pretty much just says that this firearm has been transferred to this name. It's not a certificate, but it's probably enough that if the police came knocking on your door, you could prove that this is your gun.
Right.
The CFO says, as long as you have that with you, you're fine because it has a certificate number on it.
Oh, there you go. I've had the certificate come a few days later, too.
Right, because I remember when I got my Jericho, I got a paper in the mail saying, hey, we got, like, you know, it's on its way. Like, the transfer's gone through, and your official documentation's on its way. Because I think that comes from Miramichi, if I'm not mistaken, and the other paper, like the unofficial one, is from the Ontario CFO.
Yeah, the registration certificate's from Miramichi, and the transfer approval is from the CFO Ontario.
Yeah. So, yeah, I sent you guys in the Skype, you'll see the links to Princess Auto's page. So I almost got the big one, which apparently has the pull weight of 27 pounds, and the small one has 10-pound pull.
20 pounds for the big one.
Oh, yeah, 20 pounds for the big one and 10 for the small.
I mean, if you're going to shoot steel case ammo, that would be perfect for picking it up off the range.
Yeah, so they have stuff like that at my range, but it's more of like it's not the quick release. They just have like it's a flat disc kind of thing attached to a stick.
Yeah.
Nothing too fancy.
Yeah, I've seen, I can't remember where it was, but I remember seeing a range one place they used, I remember someone showed it to me. It was for like picking up nails out of your grass, or like roofers will use it, and it's just a magnet in between two wheels, so you just wheel it around your lawn and it will suck up all the nails. And I've seen ranges have that.
Yeah, it's like one of those push mowers, but it's just a big magnet on wheels.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, is that everything, Benny?
Yeah, that's it for now. we'll leave the rest for next week. See what happens.
Yeah. All right, well, I have 2 weeks worth of stuff, so I got quite a bit here. I told you I got that speed holster for my GP100 a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
So I set that all up. Had to do a little bit of playing with it because with the revolver and a 4.2 inch barrel, it was actually about a quarter of an inch too short. So I had to reverse a few things that weren't supposed to be that way and just to make it work. But it ended up working really well. It fits really tight. I received my
Yes? Sorry, you mean your revolver barrel sticking out the bottom of the holster, or the holster?
So this is a race. No, this is a race holster. So it had the little nub that goes inside the end of the barrel, and
right.
Then the trigger guard locked. So you have to adjust it so it's just the right length, so that it will lock in the trigger guard.
Right. Okay.
And fit right on the end. Because if it wasn't in the right spot, then it wouldn't lock in the right spot, so it would just kind of flop around. So you kind of have to play with it a little bit, but I guess because of the length of the revolver, it was actually a little short.
Okay.
Yeah, but it worked out well. It's really comfortable. Like after a little while, you set it up just perfectly so that when you're starting with like your hand relaxed at side, like my hand, I think only has to move up like 3 inches, and then it's right in on the revolver and it's the exact same grip every time. So I'm liking it a lot. It's good and comfortable, and it never fell out, so that's always good.
That's great.
Yep. So I also got my new gun in the mail today, or this week, or last week, whatever it was. Yeah. So So I picked up the Walter Q5 match. So that is a striker fire in 9mm, which was the intention of it is to be my new IDPA stock service pistol gun.
Uh-huh.
How was the trigger on it?
Kind of heavy. I'm not super impressed with it. I've heard they get really good with a little bit of time or my impatientness, a little bit of polishing. But I like it because the trigger is actually really wide. It's got to be at least a quarter of an inch wide, which I find, at least compared to like Sarah's M&P, which has a much narrower trigger, because there's so much more surface area on it, I find the weight distributed better, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
I had a Marlin, like when the Marlins, before they came out with the Savage Trigger style, their first target trigger was a big, fat, wide one, which is great because it gives you the feeling that you've got less of a trigger press because you've got more surface area to hang on to.
Yeah. So I actually picked that up off Bullseye London, and I got it at a sale that came with the Red Dot. So at some point in time, I'm going to mount Red Dot onto that just for fun.
No real. I was going to ask, like, can you do that during IDPA?
Not in IDPA, no. I could technically do it, and I could run in what they call the special division. So in like your small local matches, sometimes they'll allow special, which is pretty much if you have a gun that doesn't fit into anything that IDPA, any IDPA categories. So some guys, I know one guy showed up with his pistol caliber carbine. I know a couple of guys have talked about doing like a Red Dot match, an unofficial Red Dot match. So if you have one for your pistol, show up with it kind of thing, right?
I feel like they should they would probably have to make a category for Red Dot because they're becoming more popular. I think that people are going to start, you know, running them with duty guns and stuff.
Yeah, they came out with a new rule book just this year, and I was shocked that they didn't put some sort of provision in there, like another category for essentially guns with red dots, but they didn't. So I bought it anyway. One of the big reasons why I wanted it was just when I take new people out shooting, especially like really new people, sometimes they have a hard time grasping the concept of, you know, front and rear sight, you know, equal light, equal height kind of thing.
So your version of the Donnelly?
Yeah, pretty much. Except for mine's a 9mm.
Right.
I sight in my AR because I got the new that new rest I picked up a while back. So I wanted to give it a shot, and I just sighted in, tested some of the reload. And I realized that the problems I had, well, besides I apparently have a resizing issue. But outside of that, all the double feeds and stuff that I had issues with a few weeks ago when I did my reloading, they were all magazine related, because this time I used just my steel mags and everything fed fine. So I apparently can load some 223 on a progressive press and not screw it up terribly. So last weekend I also shot an I-Cor match. I always try to describe I-Cor to people, and I always say, oh, it's like IPSC, but for revolvers only. Well, last week, we literally reused the IPSC match that was on the Saturday. We changed out the target to I-Cor targets and called it a day. So that worked out well, at least for that. It was a good match. Had lots of fun. I need to practice my table start because I noticed that was one of the only times that I had bad shots. And the only other time I did was Adam drawing my gun out. I was going to shoot the top target, then a target directly below it. And Adam drawing my gun out, I'm saying, no, shoot the bottom one, and then the recoil will bring it up to the top one. Well, when I tried to change my plan while I'm drawing my gun, it did not end well. So, but besides,
you didn't drop the gun, did you?
I didn't drop the gun. No, I dropped a shot.
Oh, okay.
I had one miss the whole match. And that was on it. And I knew what happened as soon as I did it. And I'm like, that was just dumb of me. So, oh well. Bought more bullets. Need to do some more reloading. I signed up for the I-Cor regionals next weekend. So that's the Canadian regionals. Went back to the range on Friday. Sighted in Sarah's M&P because we realized she shot a match with it and never actually checked to make sure that it had been sighted in after we put on her fiber optic sights. Double checked the GP100-0. Still shooting high as per usual with both I-Cor and IDPA loads, but nothing more I can do about that. Just practiced with the Q5. Really accurate gun. Like, I was doing some drills with it, and I was getting, like, fist-sized groups out of it. So, like, just punching out the center. but I do need to work on my first shot out of the holster. Yesterday, I went to Sarah's cowboy match. I didn't do any shooting, but spent all day at the range. And then today, I RO'd and shot two classifiers. So in the morning, I shot my Q5 for stock service pistol, and I got sharpshooter.
Excellent.
Nah, I'm not happy with it. That's what I would before. So, no real progress.
It's a brand new gun.
Yeah, I know, but I thought I was going to do better. Well, put it this way. I shot my revolver in the afternoon, and I got expert. And I went for master. I didn't make it. I couldn't make up the time, but I was a strong expert, so I am happy about that at least.
Well, you've been focusing most of your attention on the revolver these days, so that's where you excel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I did. And I guess I always kind of had it in the back of my head that I'm like, well, if I can shoot a revolver with that long double action trigger pull, well, then I should be able to run like a semi with the much shorter 5-pound trigger pull, like way faster. But no, it did not translate at all, apparently. So,
well, what does the Walther weigh in compared to the Ruger? I imagine it's quite a bit lighter.
Like the actual weight of the gun?
Yeah.
I have no idea. A lot lighter because it's a polymer gun. Yeah. So
you're probably moving the gun around a lot more than you would with the revolver. You don't have the mass in your hand.
That, and I'm shooting, I think it was about a 4.5-5-pound trigger versus my revolver, which is a solid 7. So, I mean, 2 pounds isn't that much of a difference, but I probably am pulling it a lot harder than I need to.
How many rounds did you put down with the Q5 before doing the classifier?
About 150.
So I would say if you put another, and I'm going to show a random number, but put out a lot more rounds downrange before your next classifier, and I think the habits you've gained with your GP100 will give you an edge on the Q5. I just think the Q5 is so new to you, and it's so new in itself that I think that you, your handicap that you give yourself with the GP100 aren't able to show so well yet. I think you have to become more familiar with your Q5 before it will really show, but I think you're right. The GP100 should give you an edge. It's just, you need more time to put the Q5 for it to show.
Yeah. Well, give me a number. I got to shoot provincials this weekend with it, so.
300 rounds?
300 rounds. Okay, I'll put 300 rounds through it before Sunday.
Now, remember what Andrew said. Every shot's got to be the best shot, right? None of this just, you know, pointing at the berm and pulling the trigger.
Every shot will be the best shot I've ever made. Yeah, this weekend's going to be busy. I got I-Corps regionals on Saturday and then IDPA provincials on Sunday. So
that's up at Eagle Lake?
Yep. So okay. I-Corps regionals is in Peterborough. And then, yeah, the IDPA up in Eagle Lake, which is not in Eagle Lake, Ontario. It's like up near Thunder Bay. Or no, not Thunder Bay. North Bay.
Yeah, North Bay.
Yeah, I always get the
it's
two of them mixed up.
It's still way north of Huntsville.
Oh, yeah, it's still, well, Eagle Lake is pretty close to Huntsville, but the actual club is, yeah, way up there. It's about a 4-hour drive for me, but that's because it's literally on the opposite side of Algonquin Park, so I got to go all the way around it.
It'd be about the same time for me, too, because it's about 3 hours to Algonquin Park for me, so Eagle Lake will be at least 4 hours.
Oh, wow, I thought it would have been better for you.
Where is this place?
Just north of Algonquin Park.
It's not on the Reddit. On Reddit's map of
gun clubs?
Yeah. It's Eganville. Is that what you're talking about? Eganville?
No, Eganville is about an hour away, an hour and a half from me.
Yeah.
No, so Eagle Lake.
Say, no.
Eagle Lake Gun Club. Here, I'm just zooming out on this on Google Map. It's near Sundridge, Ontario. If you search Eagle Lake Gun Club, it'll come up. But if you don't put in Gun Club, then it will take you down near Huntsville. There's a lake there, apparently called Eagle Lake. Anyways, yep, so that's most of it. Just a lot of brass cleaning and doing some little prep work for I-Corps and IDPA next weekend.
So someone on Reddit made a list of a whole bunch of different clubs. Apparently it's not a full list, but this one is not on the list.
Oh.
I guess I'm going to have to add that to the map sometime. Oh, well.
All right, so, Thomas, why don't you take us away with our one and only story for the night?
Well, I remember we were talking about last month that Ruger had a recall on the new Mark IV that it was able to fire with the safety partially engaged. So when they issued the recall, Ruger notified everyone affected to sign up for the fix and wait for further instructions. And unfortunately, it's not just the individuals that were inconvenienced by this news. There was the dealers, distributors, manufacturers that had altered their sales plans based on the recall announcement. I think the biggest one affected would probably be Volkskorten, a leader in the Ruger rimfire parts and accessories. They had to halt all their sales and distribution of their accurizing kits because they wouldn't work with the affected parts. So last week, they sent out an announcement to customers informing them that they had progressed and they're doing an upgrade to the target sears. And if you actually go on to the Volkskorten website, you can get some additional information. If you ordered one of their kits and then found out about the recall, you need the part exchanged. Links in the show notes. Have a look at Volkskorten sites. Do you have any Volkskorten stuff in your 1022?
I don't know. I've always meant to buy some, but then I just think I don't shoot it enough.
If you want to give yourself an awesome trigger gob, just get the Volkskorten hammer. It'll drop your factory trigger pull from 7 to like 2.5 pounds.
I don't know. I'm pretty good with a Dremel.
We're not recommending that you take a Dremel to your 1022 hammer or sear.
Oh, yeah. Thomas, my dad was wondering, was saying, he has to get a new cleaning tool because the Remington doesn't have, you can't access it, right? So I'm like, just drill a hole in the back. You should have seen the look on his face.
There already is a hole in the back.
Of the Remington, really?
Yeah, there's a rubber stopper. For that tape, it's for when the bolt goes back, it hits a rubber stopper. Where say on the Ruger, there's a cross pin. What I did with mine, because I have a 597, I carefully took out the rubber stopper, clean it, and then I glue the rubber stopper back in. So there actually is already a hole in the back of your 597.
Okay, I'll have to have a look at then.
Now be careful when you don't try to rip it out from the inside because it's a one small tab that goes in the back of the receiver attached to a big rubber stopper. So if you want to try to remove it, you want to remove it from the outside of the receiver. So you just want to disengage the small part and try to push that through.
Okay.
Because that's what I did. I ripped mine off the first time and I had to order another one. So I'm very careful.
So Benny, what's new in the industry?
New in the industry. Stevens 301 single shot should now be on your dealer's shelves. The 301 is available in 12 and 20 gauge and 410 bore. All models have a 26 inch barrel with black matte finish and black synthetic stock. I believe the 12 and 20 come with one choke tube, but I'm not sure about the 410. With the MSRP of 173, it is sure to fill the void left by the demise of H&R single shot. I assume they are made in Turkey, but I was unable to confirm where they are made. Yeah, thank you, Thomas.
You're welcome. Well, the only other options we have are there are no Canadian or U.S. made single shots right now. Because H&R took over NEF. And when H&R shut down, they only shut down their production facilities. They are still importing Turkish pump guns. So H&R is still alive and active, but there's no more single shot lines. So I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure the Stevens stuff is made in Turkey. Maybe some of it's made in China. But I'm pretty sure these are Turkish. And these are nicer than there's some Uzcons right now. And they've got a stupid plastic brake in the front. It looks really fragile. Where the Stevens looks a lot like the H&R. It's got the metal brake release. It looks like a clone of the H&R. So for $173, it's glad to see that they're back out on the market.
So when it said that it comes with one choke tube, you think they're going to be changeable?
Well, the picture I saw, it looked like a 12 gauge. Of course, you can't tell, and it did have a choke tube. 410s usually don't, unless it's a high dollar competition gun. Most 410s just come with a full choke tube.
Okay.
Oh, which reminds me, I got to clean my shotgun before tomorrow.
Just spray some brake cleaner down, and it'll be fine.
I hope so.
Well, actually, how many rounds have you put through it since you picked it up?
I probably put in, what was it, the 8 you gave me, and then the 5 that I shot at, nope, the 5 slug, yeah, 5 slugs I shot at Silverdale the other day, and then the 3 that I tried to shoot at the charity shoot, so 13 shots.
Tried being the operative word.
Well, they went off, I just couldn't get the hull out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it wasn't you at all.
No, I think I probably just have to lube it.
It shouldn't really need any cleaning. I cleaned it before I gave it to you. I just run a boar snake through them. And we'll talk about cleaning later because actually we have a listener question on that.
Great.
All right, so moving on to the main topic, eye protection.
So this is where I can duck out for a cigarette because this is going to be like a half hour, right?
Last time you ducked out, Thomas, we actually needed you in the middle and then it was kind of awkward because you weren't
there. I put it right in the show notes. I'll be back in 2 minutes. I had to go to the washroom. Then I heard the show. Thomas, he actually did go, didn't he?
So just as a disclaimer, you only get one set of eyes, and if you go blind, there is no coming back from that injury. So just because you haven't been hit yet does not make it safe for you to take off your glasses, and regular sunglasses and prescription glasses are not the same as safety glasses. So to start us off with some really boring technical information, what's the difference between protective glasses? So there are different standards for ensuring the safety level of protective glasses. The Canadian Work Standard is known as CSA Z94.3, set out by the Canadian Standards Association. The American Work Standard is known as ANSI or ANSI Z87.1. And last, there is a military standard 662, or generally known as ballistic glasses, which is controlled by APEL, the Authorized Protective Eyewear List. So ANSI being the most popular and recognized, these all have standards that must be met to be certified, which is mostly based on a test that involves shooting a specific size, shape, and weight object at a specific speed at the lens and have the lens not break. And also the frames can't lose control of the lens. Like sometimes you see them get hit and you'll literally see the lens fall out of the frame. So glasses can meet more than one classification. ANSI and CSA are very similar. While likely all military standard 662 will meet ANSI and CSA standards, the reverse is not necessarily true. There is a standard that the Canadian military puts out, but I had a lot of difficulty finding any information on it. So the strength of safety glasses comes from their flexibility, not their hardness. There is a cool YouTube video out there showing how they test them, and you can see them flex. Regular prescription and sunglasses will shatter. So I have a link here for that YouTube video, and I will put it in the show notes. So how do you identify your safety glasses? I couldn't find a definitive answer on the CSA marks, how CSA marks their glasses, but I did find that they do mark them somewhere. You can identify ANSI certified eyewear with a marking on the glasses. So lenses passing high impact test requirement will include a little plus symbol mark on them. Marking of high impact lenses by a manufacturer will include the trademark and the plus symbol. For example, if a lens is trademarked with a T, then the mark would be T plus. So there are a couple other things that you can find on there. So an L and a number is the visible light filter rating. R and a number is the infrared filter rating. V is photochromatic or transition lens designation. S is special purpose lens designation. And the U and a number is the ultraviolet light scale rating.
So yeah, I need that if you're welding or something.
Yeah, I figured a lot of that stuff had a lot more to do with specific safety glasses. Yeah, I was thinking of that, and I was also thinking, what am I thinking? X-ray, like medical equipment, things like that, where you might need to bandwidth of light, I think?
Yeah, bandwidth.
Yeah.
Or wavelength, something like that.
Yeah.
It's wavelength.
So until January 2016, there was no requirement for the APEL or APEL eyewear to have any indicating marks, but they should have a marking on them somewhere that indicate that they are, and they should. All these markings should be etched into the lens of the glasses and on the frames. That way, that you know that the combination is the proper ones. So, what to look for when you're looking for some glasses? Something to consider when you're looking at when selecting a pair of glasses are the standard which they rated for. So if you're shooting, you want to make sure that you have the proper rated glasses. Prescription lenses. So if you need prescriptions, I believe you can get the ANSI ones in prescription lenses, but you can't get the Apel ones in it. But you can get Apel lenses or like glasses that have a little holder that you can put your prescription in behind it. You need to make sure that you have proper fit. So you need to make sure the top and the sides are tight against your face. That way you don't get, well, rash coming back down or from the side. Just general comfort. UV protection if you want some. Polarized if you want them for, polarized if you're going fishing with them later. Adjustability. So sometimes the arms are adjustable, I guess, for length and just general comfort. If you're cross-dominant and you want to block one eye, you can get shooting glasses that have one side will be, I don't know how to describe it, but they kind of, I would almost say they almost like mess up one side. So it's a little bit, it's almost like looking through like frosting or something like that on like your front window. It just doesn't look quite right. And it's meant to make it so that your non-dominant eye will take over automatically. You can get side blind to eliminate any light from the side. So you tend to see Olympic level shooters using things like that. And then also your colors, right? Who doesn't want to make sure that their lenses match their belt and shoes, right? But there is more to it than that. So option for prescription glasses. Unfortunately, from what I could find, you cannot get ballistic glasses that have a prescription built into them. You can, however, get ballistic glasses that take an insert that will hold your prescription lenses. I read that you can get ANSI and CSA certified prescription glasses with your prescription built into the lens, but I could not find any. In the manual of the glasses that I just picked up, it shows a nose bridge option that would hold your prescription. Another little side point here, depending on what your career is, some places will actually pay for you to get prescription ANSI or CSA certified glasses. Like if you need glasses and they need to be safety glasses, your work might just cover them. Benny, you want to take over here for a little bit?
Okay, what color you got? Different lenses can enhance or diminish your vision based on the time of day, amount of sunlight, and what you're aiming at. For an average daytime shooter, here are some of your options. Rose, shooting orange with a black edge and black targets. This lens darkens the sky and fades out the green background. Yellow, good for all colored targets. Also fades out green background, which enhances the target. Orange, good all-around shade for orange targets, especially on average sun or light overcast days. Bronze, a good all-purpose lens for skeet, traps, sports clay on a bright day and general hunting conditions. Red, most of the lenses described above have a percentage of vermilion chemicals in the coating to enhance the target color. People who have a red/green color deficiency find this lens best for general conditions. For low light conditions, you may want to go with a gold, clear, or yellow lens. These colors will give you a high percentage of transmission and a better definition of your target. In intense sunlight or glare, it's best to go with a much darker lens. Most people have some shade or gray, but you may also opt for a dark yellow to keep the previously mentioned benefits of the color while reducing the light transmission through the lens. There is also nothing wrong with using plain clear glasses at any time, as they can be worn in any situation. You will just lose some of the benefits tinting has to offer. Problems with fogging. There are anti-fogging sprays and anti-fogging wipes that can be used to reduce the chances of fogging. I have found that I get a lot of fogging in the winter when shooting rifles or shotguns, as my breath will bounce off the stock and up onto my glasses. I don't think I've found that so much, but I don't think I've shot as much as Mike has.
No. Actually, on Friday when I was out shooting, it was really hot, muggy day. And when I had intense focus, I could see the fog coming up on my glasses.
So I have that problem all the time when I cover my mouth and my breath goes up onto my glasses. But if I'm not wearing a scarf or a neck warmer or something like that, then I don't have the problem.
Oh, no.
Goggles. You can get goggles that are safety rated and certs that are prescription. These are good for people in really dusty/sandy areas where debris can get behind regular glasses, or those who are employed to carry a firearm. where to get the glasses. You can get CSA and ANSI certified glasses pretty much anywhere, Canadian Tire, Walmart, Home Depot, etc. If you're looking for APL rated glasses, there are a few different options out there that can be found using Google. Just make sure you swing by the manufacturer website to ensure they meet the requirements you'd like. If you are concerned about any of the products, just search YouTube for the brand Glasses Test, and I was easily able to find independent people shooting them to test their strength.
Yeah, I threw a YouTube in there. I think that was ESS, and they showed a demo of theirs. So they do like the minimum test, and then they showed their glasses, if I remember this correctly, and they shot it like 20 times, and it never shattered or anything. Like, it took 20 shots. And you just That's see the glasses are marked to heck. You couldn't see anything through them, but at least
your eyes intact.
That's what matters. And that's really the important part. Thank you, Benny, for covering me there. Had to
no problem.
Finish and refill the beer.
Yeah, Thomas. So, what do you wear?
Well, I've got a couple. I've got because I wear prescription. I actually have a pair of Hilco T-Zone, but they're sport goggles. So they're ASTM. So they're designed for racquetball or stuff like that. So they're not bulletproof. But I either wear these or if I'm wearing my contacts, then I have some safety glasses that I actually some Breda safety glasses that I won last year.
Okay. So I just use I picked up some sunglasses when I was in the Army, actually from this company called Zenni Optical. I found out about them when I was in high school. If you know your prescription and you don't really care what your glasses look like, or even if you care what your glasses look like, because they have quite a selection, they have like their glasses range from like $7 to $30. If you don't have a crazy prescription, so I just get a regular pair of sunglasses, and then they have an insert in them that are plastic that are my lenses for my prescription. So it's sort of like a double layer. When I finally get a new pair, I want to shoot my old ones and see what they look like after getting hit by a 22. Or maybe find someone with a high-powered air gun and shoot them with that, because whatever.
Yeah,
science, I did, right? I did that, actually. When I got my last pair of safety glasses, the guys at the store said, oh, yeah, these things are bulletproof. And I said, right. So I got my new glasses, and I took the old glasses up to the range at 23 yards, and I put some packing tape over it just in case they did shatter, and it went right through each one. It's fragmented about 5 or 6 pieces each.
Yeah.
So the next day I went back to a shop. I said, you better not tell people these are bulletproof. Yeah. And I gave them the lenses.
Yeah.
Say, never go by what the salesmen tell you. Actually, look on the frames itself, and the standards will be marked on it for what it's rated at.
And besides apparently the new SAS's face mask, these are no glasses are bulletproof. It's just the nature of it, because of how much force you're putting on such a small area that you're requiring to be translucent. They just can't make them bulletproof.
Right. Well, they could if they're going to make them 6 inches thick.
Yeah.
Are you going to see them at that point?
Then you'd look like Thomas, though.
So I use basically regular sunglasses, but I don't know. I feel like they have a little bit extra protection because there is a double layer. How good that protection is, it's better than nothing, but I doubt I'm going to stop anything going any real speed. But the nice thing about them is they are padded, so they do go really close to your face, and I don't have to worry about anything getting caught between my glasses and my face. So
yeah. And since none of us are on any two-way ranges, at least not anymore, really, we're not looking for bulletproof. We're more looking for protection from ricochets off of steel, off of that, you know, that rock that happened to be in the berm that no one knew about, you know, a round goes off that, or even just wood splintering coming back, things like that, right?
Yeah, stuff that happens all the time. Like the last match I was at, one came back and hit Colin in the head, and another one came back and hit me in the arm. Mm-hmm. It's just enough where, you know, it just dinged the skin, but if you get that in the soft tissue of your eye, then it could cause a major problem.
Your eye is not actually soft. It is apparently hard. I found that out from...
Nah, I'm pretty sure it's soft.
No, I have...
Poking it right now.
your lens hardened as you get older, though.
Oh, no, you're...
No, I can see what you mean.
Yeah, your actual eyeball, because I actually have a friend who... he was doing steel work, and he got a sliver of steel, and it got stuck in his eye. And when he went to the eye doctor, they had to scrape it out. And he said, you know, you think that your eye is squishy and soft, but the doctor literally took, like, I don't know what it was, like this metal scalpel and just scraped it across his eye because his eye was hard.
Yeah, if you can, thinking people about it, don't work with metal.
Yeah.
Because if you ever need an MRI, yeah, might rip your eye out.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the questions. I've had two MRIs last month. And that's one thing, if you've ever had any metal injury to your eye.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's in the questionnaire. And they also want to know about tattoos, because I guess sometimes people can actually have metallic paint or something in the tattoo. Yeah.
Oh, really?
I've heard of that one before.
Hmm.
So, Mike, what do you use?
I use the Wiley X Saber Advanced Shooting Glasses. I picked them up from Cabela's. I picked them up when there was free shipping, and my local store didn't have any, so I picked them up. I think they're awesome. Like, I don't know if it's just because my sunglasses that I wear day-to-day are all scratched up, and I just don't care because they're my day-to-day sunglasses, so I don't care if I accidentally drop them on the ground. But when I go to the range and I switch to those ones, man, they're just clear.
Yes, you should check out my Zenni, because a guy bought them in my high school for not prank, but he decided, you know, he was going to just, for his costume, he was going to wear some weird glasses. So he ordered like 3 or 4 different glasses, and the total was like $25. And so then from then on, that's where like everyone in my class ordered their glasses from, because it's like dirt cheap.
Yeah.
So it's coming from China, but I enjoy them. So if you need glasses, that's where we go.
Yeah. When I picked these up, I did exactly what I said. I searched them, and I searched glasses test just to see, you know, I had trouble figuring out if these were actually like ballistic glasses or if these are just, you know, Cabela selling them as ballistic glasses. So I looked them up, and they actually are 8 Appel rated glasses. So yeah, and the one I picked up the multi-pack, so it comes with the tinted, the clear, and the yellow, and all I've used is tinted so far because I'm lazy and I don't want to change the glasses.
I tried changing the lenses in my Beretta glasses, and it's a pain in the butt. It's hard getting those suckers out.
Yeah, well, that's just it, right? Because part of the rating also involves the frame, not just the lenses. It needs to be able to hold on to those lenses stinking tight.
These leader ones I got at Walmart, as I said, they're designed more for racquetball, but they close right close to your face, so you're not going to get any brass coming over the top. And they pretty much cover the side too. They fit pretty flush to your face. So it's these are a lot better than just using my straight prescription glasses, at least. Gives you a much greater level of protection.
Yeah. I'll ask you, Thomas, what did you look for when you picked up your glasses?
I wanted something that wrapped around the side. That was my main thing. When I put it on, it actually covers the side of my eye. That's the one thing that I looked at.
Yeah. How about you, Benny?
I've never really thought of it as a, I was thinking of it as a one-way range. So I never even really thought about ricochets. My only concern has always been brass. So I wore whatever glasses I had available to me, and I always wear a baseball cap. So I found these really nice glasses and these sunglasses, and that's always what I've used.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, when I picked out mine, I wanted to look cool, because, you know, that's the first rule, look cool.
Right, so any of the pictures you see me online where I'm wearing sunglasses, that's them.
Okay.
They actually come with an extra extra padding on the arms, but I guess I've grown too fat, so I have to take those off. Otherwise, I just squeeze my head. So, yeah.
You're telling us you have a big head?
Yeah, yeah. The charity shoot did not help with that. And listening to every podcast afterwards, praise Mike and I on our shooting abilities. So I guess everyone thought, because, you know, we're from New Shooter Canada, we were the dark horse.
Yeah, we're just a bunch of noobs, right? We don't know what we're doing.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're just playing them.
I'm surprised nobody threw me under the bus for not attending. That surprised me, because I listen to Modern Rifleman Radio and Slapfire.
Yeah.
Someone mentioned you, I think. But they didn't throw you under the bus.
I half expected to have an effigy from Filthy to be shot up at something towards the end, but that was nice. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
I think he was supposed to come, but he didn't make it in the end. I think he was supposed to come, and then Because I was listening to Slamfire, and Trevor was saying how he booked a room for Adriel, and then he promised it to Filthy, and then realized that he booked it for Adriel, and then it worked out in the end or something. So I think in the end, Filthy couldn't make it.
Oh.
But, yeah.
Well, it's good that Frosty made it, at least.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so there's a whole bunch of gun shows. You want to read them all?
Just the date and the name, and then they can just link down to the CCSA website to get more details.
Okay. So you have the Woodstock Gun Show. That's on the August the 13th. You have the Eganville Gun Show, August 19th to 20th. Perry Sound Anglers and Hunters 4th Annual Gun Show. That's on the 26th. Then you have Orangeville Gun Show. That's on the 27th. I got to look into that because that's a Sunday. I might look into that. Okay. Yeah, visit the CCSA website for more information or check our show notes.
Yep, that'll be in our show notes. Thomas, you kind of alluded earlier to this listener email we received, so why don't you take that away?
So listener Terry, actually George tagged me on this, and Terry wanted to know how often he should clean his shotgun. And I remember he just got a Mossberg 88 not too long ago. So as a new shooter, he put the question on CCFR page, and George tagged me in it. So, you know, I put my responses, but let me just pull it up here with my old man glasses so I can see the phone. And it's amazing the different responses we've got. Some people put they clean the shotgun every time they shoot. Some people just do it 2 times a year before they go out for hunting season when they come back from hunting season. Jeremy says every time he shoots, he cleans it. Same with the competition shooters. They said every time. It's funny how, and some guys have had their 870s for 4 or 5 years, 10,000 rounds, and have never cleaned them. So shotgun's a little bit different than a rifle. A rifle, you've got landing grooves that are really going to affect your accuracy if the barrel's not maintained and properly cleaned. With shotguns, it's just a smooth bore. So, you know, the cleaning, if you get a little rusting or pitting, it's not really going to affect your accuracy the same way it would with a rifle. But my response that I put in here, I can't find it. My response basically I put down, it depends on the action type you have, the finish, environmental use, and how often it was fired, storage, you know. What I would normally suggest, when you get a new gun, right from the store, take it home, field strip it, take all the factory lube off. You don't have to give it a thorough cleaning. Like if you're shooting, and you know, just shooting around a trap, you've got a bore snake, and you've got a pump action, and when you come home, run a bore snake down the barrel, maybe put a little oil on the rails and give it a good wipe down. But, you know, if you only put 25, 50, you know, rounds through shooting, you don't have to clean it every single time. But, you know, once you get, it depends. Like if you're outside and it's snowing or it's raining and it gets wet, and then, yeah, you have to clean it right away when you get home because you don't have to worry about rust and everything else. But there's so many variables on how often you should clean it, depending on what type of gun you have. Like if you've got, Beretta. Beretta is notorious for being running clean, but your gas system gets filthy. So if you've got something with a piston, you may have to clean that out every 500 rounds. A pump, you could wait thousands of rounds before you clean it because you've got no mechanism except the rail. So it all depends, as I said, on the type of firearm, type of action, and what your environment that you're shooting the gun. Like if you're just going out and shooting a box of clays, I'd just wipe it off on a bore snake and put it in the safe. You don't have to give a complete strip down. What about you, Mike? How often do you clean your shotguns?
You're supposed to clean your shotguns?
Exactly.
I think I've run a bore snake through my 500. I don't know. We'll say a couple of times, and that thing has seen hundreds and hundreds of rounds because I used to shoot a lot of trap with that gun, and I hunted with it. I mean, I'd wipe the outside down if it was wet kind of thing, you know, if I took it hunting and it was raining or just going from inside outside. Yeah, but boar snake a couple times, and I haven't even run a boar snake down my Versamax yet, so not often. Might be an understatement.
I've got a 12-gauge boar snake, and I use my 45 boar snake for my revolver for my 410 pump, because it's the same side. But yeah, when I'm done, I always run a boar snake through the barrel before I put it in the safe.
No, I definitely don't even do it that often.
Well, because I'm not sure how long it's going to be in there.
Yeah.
So I might not use that gun for a year. So I use either Slipstream or what was the stuff I got? A combination cleaner lubricant.
Yeah.
So at least, you know, if I'm protecting it, not necessarily cleaning it, but I'm putting a layer of protection because it's going to be sat in storage for a long time.
And like you said, I think it also depends on your action type as well, because as you were saying this, I realized, yeah, I probably should clean my Versamax a little bit more because it is a gas-operated a semi, right? Whereas my, like you said, my Mossberg 500, it's a pump. Like, there's nothing to go wrong with that. There's nothing really to clog up. And, I mean, I say that, but I'm sure someone's going to raid in. Oh, I've had mine lock up on me, or, you know, the trigger didn't work, or...
No one has
to... Or Benny's going to write back to the show, you know, oh, my pump didn't work after just 20 rounds, but...
Yeah, I really got to figure out what's going on there.
But that's why I have a 500, right? So I don't have to worry about that.
So this means you want me to bring a shotgun tomorrow, Benny, and we'll have a look at the used car?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
Yeah, okay, no problem.
At the very least, we can try and find out what's wrong with the used car, because...
Like, the only problem you're going to have with the pump is that if you put it away wet, you have a chance that the firing pin could seize up in the forward position. You can have a slam fire that's not maintained and properly lubricated. Most of the receivers, like the Mossberg, your receiver's aluminum. And your rails are steel. So I usually try to keep some type of lubrication on the rails.
Yeah. But I mean, even when you're just saying, you know, your firing pin rusting in there, seizing up in there, like you would have to, I don't know, be walking around muzzle up with a raindrop that falls into your 26-inch barrel straight down, land on that firing pin, and seeps in there to create that pitting or rust that would seize it one way or the other.
If it gets wet, take the gun apart, field strip it, and clean it right away.
Yeah.
Because you can get torrential rains, and the rain's coming in sideways. Like, if any of your firearms ever get wet, that's the best thing to do if you want to maintain it, is just get it dry as soon as you can.
Yeah.
I don't really see that as a malfunction. I just see that as, you know, it's a shift of your trigger, you know? You're no longer pulling the trigger to fire, you're just pumping. It still works.
I hear it faster.
A friend of mine about 10 years ago went dove hunting down, was it Mexico or Brazil, and he had the new Beretta autoloader, and he put 10,000 rounds through that thing, and it still functioned. It slowed down a little bit, but it still functioned.
Yeah.
So on a pump, Terry, you don't have to clean it that often, but I recommend just running a bore snake through it when you come home and just giving it a wipe down before you put it in the safe.
Yeah.
And, you know, if once in a while, you may have to do an extended cleaning on the barrel, because not only do you have leading, you also have a buildup of the wad. You'll see strips of plastic sometimes building up in your barrel.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, I've seen, you'll see pieces of plastic, like just lines. Because the wadding could actually be embedded to the side.
That just goes back to how often I clean my shotgun.
That actually reminds me of something I got this week. Oops. I finally got my Lee keyhole slug mold. I think that's what it's called. I'm working off memory here. Basically, you can buy your shot, your like regular shot shells. You cut the crimp out, pour out the, leave the ribbon, like the rollover, pour out the shot, melt it, pour it into this mold, and then bam, you got yourself a slug that you can just push back into the shell, and away you go.
Oh, you'll have to do a full review on that, 'cause that sounds kind of interesting.
Right. I'm not the first to do this, and someone suggested this actually at Land Shooting Supplies, because instead of paying $8 for five slugs, you're paying
$8 for 25 shells.
It's a lot cheaper. So
yeah.
I just have to go out and get some other supplies that I need, but otherwise I'm looking.
You'll need a lead pot, you'll need a ladle, you'll need gloves. You need a safe place to do it.
You just need a hot fire and your wife's oven mitts.
I bought a Lee ingot mold and the actual slug mold. So I'm going to do is I'm going to use a blowtorch outside, obviously.
Oh.
Melt like one shot at a time, because I have no idea how long it takes these things to dry off. Pour it into the mold until it's full, and then wait for it to cool, I guess, and then dump it somewhere. I don't know. I need a lubricant still, and there's a whole bunch of other stuff I need before I can really get started seriously. But yeah, you don't need an actual smelter. You can just use a blowtorch.
I like how there was a question in there, like, should I just pour it out while it's still kind of soft?
Well, yeah, I don't know.
If you want expert reloading information, we suggest you listen to the Reloading Podcast and ask Mike or Jeremy a question.
Yes, yeah. Agreed.
They have done shotgun reloading shows too, so.
Yeah.
But from what I've looked into reloading shotgun shells, and at the price of lead these days, at least where I found it, it was not even worth my effort to reload, and I reload pretty much everything.
You know, the only thing I would add about the shotgun is if you've got removable chokes, and I usually do this, when you're finished, undo the choke, give a wipe down, a little coating oil around the threads, and put it back in. Because if you get all the heat coming in out of the end, it tends to tighten up the chokes after every use. And if you run that choke through, you know, 15, 20 times and you don't keep it lubricated, good luck trying to get it out.
I actually had just that problem when I shot with the same choke on my shotgun for like years. I don't even know how long, and I never took it out. And then I can't remember why, but for whatever reason, I was going to change it, and I could not get that thing to budge. What I actually did that made it eventually budge is I set it up so that it was muzzle up, and I took oil and I put oil all in the rim, like in that little like gap between the end of the barrel and the choke. And I let it sit there for like a day, and I kept reapplying the oil until I could finally crack it.
A friend of mine gave me his shotgun a couple of years ago, and he asked me if I could take out the choke tube. Now, normally I would have just taken the end of the barrel and put it in some liquid wrench and let it sit in there for a couple of days to loosen it up. But it was camo dip, so I couldn't do that because it would take the finish off. So I did the same thing that you did, and I kept putting the oil. I bent up 4 wrenches and I still couldn't get it off.
Jeez.
I was putting the barrel on a vise, and I had a pair of vise grips on the choke tube wrench, and I kept bending up the tools.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, because those choke tube tools. Now, actually, I'll say, minus my wife's one, she had this super heavy duty one that came with her gun. But every other one I've gotten is just a flimsy little piece of like sheet metal that I've never been too impressed with.
Because when you fire, you got all the hot gases and all the particles getting in there, and there's still minute seams in there. And you constantly have the tip of the barrel, it gets warm, and you'll actually burn off your oil eventually from the heat and all the grime getting in there. So when you put your tube in, you don't put it in really tight. Just put it in finger tight, just so you can do it and crank it with your finger.
Yeah.
Because if you put it too tight, you're never going to uncrack it if you...
And a little bit of the anti-seize stuff goes a long way, too, for helping you out.
Yes, the automotive stuff, it comes in a silver or gold. That stuff's really good.
Yes. Yep.
And I think that's actually what it's called, is anti-seize compound, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And you can get it from Canadian Tire. And you'll need it to build your AR, Benny.
Yes. Which reminds me, though, do I need a vise to take the flash hider off my Tavor? Probably, right?
A vise to do it? Yeah. It depends on how good of a hold you can get on your rifle while you're trying to twist the muzzle device.
Okay.
I'll say this. Mine was on so tight on my AR, I had to buy an AR upper block vise to be able to get enough hold on it. Because otherwise, it'll just spin in your hands. So,
I think I'm going to have to YouTube search that, because I don't think anyone makes a vise for the Tavor.
Yeah, at least not as easily found on Amazon as the AR one was.
Oh, never mind. I was going to say, maybe if the... I don't think the barrel lugs are the same. Otherwise, you could probably get... I think Geisley makes the barrel... Like, you just fit the barrel onto the end of it. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Okay. This tool is basically a bar with slots cut into it, so it fits in into the end of your barrel, the receiver end of your barrel, so you can like put on your gas tube and all that jazz.
Okay.
Without an actual upper. So it doesn't use the upper to hold it in place. It uses the totally blanking on the name.
The locking lugs?
Yeah, the locking lugs, pretty much, yeah.
Okay. Are they the same in a Tavor as they are in an AR?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I was going to say, I imagine that would be very gun-specific. But the other thing too is with an AR, depending on your muzzle brake, actually, I'd assume pretty much everyone, you would have to put your gas block on before your muzzle device. And most people don't think of putting on their gas block until they already have it inside the upper. Trying to line the tube up and everything. So.
Right. No. The only positive to using the Geissele thing is that you don't have to, if you have like an optic mounted on your, because I think most of the time when you're using a vice block on an upper, it like clamshells.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So with this does you don't need to do that because it just sits in the locking lugs. It doesn't sit on the, doesn't affect where your optic is.
Yeah. Like I had to take my red dot off when I changed my muzzle device out. Now, mind you, I took mine off and I put it on and it didn't even, and I went like, oh, I'm going to have to re-zero it. And I took it out. Didn't even need to. It was still bang on. But that could be more luck than anything. All right. So if you have any feedback, questions, or comments, you can send them to host@newshootercanada.ca, our Facebook page, or in the comment section on our website at newshootercanada.ca. So iTunes. We have at least one new review, and we couldn't remember if we read the other one, so we'll read it again just in case we didn't.
It's the new rule, everyone. If we get a new review, we're going to read the new one and the last one we got, so everyone gets a double read. You can feel special twice.
So this one is from Lakeboy 1971, and it is from May 10th. I have been listening since the day George did the show by himself. It has evolved extremely well and is a great source of information. Hope George jumps in more in the future. Well, he actually has the last couple of times, so I'm sure Lakeboy 1971 appreciate that, and that's a 5-star review.
Excellent.
And we have another 5-star review. So this one titled Great Resource, Great People, and Fun, and a Fun and Informative Podcast for All Shooters. I have been listening for the past 6 to 8 months. It's been a blast to follow the group on their journeys, outings, and competitions. This podcast is great for both the new shooters as well as those who are just part of the firearms community and looking for some fun banter on interesting topics. Mike, Benny, and Thomas, best of luck in the episodes to come, and hopefully our paths will cross down the road. Listener Kyle. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kyle.
That's a great review.
And sorry it took us so long to find it.
No, that was the one that's only like 3 days old.
Oh, okay, good.
It's Lakeboy 1971. That's the person that we should really be apologizing to. Or saying congratulations for getting yours read twice, one or the other. We're not sure yet.
I think it's read twice, but who knows?
Yeah.
We appreciate it. Whether you give us an iTunes review, like our Facebook page, or drop us an email, we'd love to hear from our listeners.
Yeah, that's one of the greatest parts of doing this podcast.
Especially if you're throwing George under the bus. We like reading those.
So our Facebook likes, as of now, we have 1,140.
Excellent.
Always great. Okay, shout out, Thomas. What do you got?
My shout out is to, well, let's do the closing comments first. I just want to say support your local advocacy group. The CCFR is on a fundraising drive right now, and the CCSA could always use your money. So, you know, if you don't belong to one or either of the organizations, do yourself a favor, if not just for the insurance, do it to help protect our rights. So my shout out is to David from Grand Power for Lunch and the education today. I appreciate it. I've learned a lot from David about the firearms industry in Canada. So I'm looking forward to turning this part-time job into something a little more once I retire.
Benny, how about you?
Shout out to my wife for the usual, keeping me sane and helping me get through that emotional roller coaster. You don't understand how stressed out I was when the farm went down. I was like, oh no, I spent all this time, all this effort, and it's all for naught. And I really felt the world was coming to an end. And my wife was like, go sit in your room. I'm going to take care of this. And she she did. So
she sent you to your room?
Yeah, she pretty much, she's like, go sit down, relax.
Okay.
Go watch some TV or something. And I'm going to do it. And so she sat down, she went on Kijiji. And she started emailing people and trying to get stuff arranged. And yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, she's a mom, yeah. So she's got experience like that.
Oh, yeah. So thanks to her. And thanks to Thomas for tomorrow. I know it hasn't happened yet, but still. still really appreciated.
You're welcome, then. We'll see if we can get you something a little more reliable set up.
Well, hey, if anything, it's going to be a learning experience, and I hope to get the Ooscon set up to be more, not more reliable, but just, you know what? I've never cleaned the thing. I've never oiled the thing. It's probably just I have to apply a little REM oil to it. So we'll see what happens.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I guess that's it.
So my shout out is to George for almost making it through last week's episode without squirreling way too far off.
Almost.
Until the very end when he started reading from Wikipedia about spaghetti westerns.
Wasn't that technically on topic, though?
I don't know what point in time it was. He almost made it, and he just went, like, so far off the rails. Yeah.
You know what? To be honest, when we called the episode Spaghetti Westerns, I legitimately thought we were going to talk about cowboy guns. I did not think we were going to talk about our good, bad, and ugly time at the range. But hey, yeah. That worked too.
Well, I kind of panicked because I've got a whole thing written on lever guns already. I say, George, I've already got something already in the can and we've been putting it off. Now you want to do it?
Yeah.
But as soon as I said I wanted to do an episode on lever 22, he's like, I'm in.
No, that's what happens when you don't read the show notes and you're just like, oh, Spaghetti Westerns. It must be about cowboy guns.
Yeah. But no, it was actually really fun editing that show because for the first time in what, like, pretty much since I started editing the show, I was like a new kid, you know, listening to it for the first time. It was really fun. It's a different experience listening to something to the first time versus listening to what you talked about earlier on. And, you know the joke that's about to be made, but it was really fun. I really I had a great time, even though I wasn't even there.
And I saved the show because George's audacity was so bad it was unusual, but I accidentally recorded it on my Skype, so we had an extra copy that was usual. Usable.
Yeah.
I'm medicated on Percocets right now, so my mouth isn't working, neither is my brain.
I'm the only sober one on the show tonight.
Yeah, I guess technically I'm impaired too.
Okay, well then maybe we should all sign out before this crashes any further. Thomas, take us on out of here.
Until next week, keep your barrels pointed downrange and smoking.
Time spent at the range is time spent with family.
It's not about the odds, it's about the stakes.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks for putting up with us. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Well, I really like 22 now.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page.
The way they look, I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale, hell, I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.
We're trying to spend his money for him.
Oh, I can do that like no other. I can get Sarah in here. She can help.
Oh, I'm sure she would.
I have been listening for the past 6 to 4 months. It's been a blast to follow. 6 to 8 months. See, I'm I'm three tall boys deep here. I don't have to go to work tonight, so.
Woo. Oh, so you're pulling a George.
Yeah, pretty much. It's okay, Sarah. You're eating, you made cookies? Oh, I got excited.
Ooh, we like cookies.
See, now they want cookies. No, there's no cookies.
Aww.
Well, cookies could motivate. Did you want, like, to expand my waist. To get the knife out and put another notch in the belt.